good, what's good? It's C. Wood. Back at you again with another edition of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Ball About the South, that sports podcast where it's real sports, real Southern flavor. I am Kerry Wood, but call me C. Wood for short. At C. Wood on sports on Twitter and IG. That's where you can find me. And I'm back. After a pretty good hiatus, I am definitely back. In effect, right here on Ball About the South. I do apologize for it being such a long time between episodes, but we're back and we're about to do this thing the way we have always done it. And definitely appreciate you coming in to join me here on this, the latest episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Most definitely. Again, follow me if you're on Twitter, IG, all of those. At C. Wood on sports, and that's, you know, that's where I'm at, man. You know, just come holler at me. I love talking sports on Twitter or IG. Well, I don't do IG as much as I do Twitter, but and that's something I need to get a little bit better at. But you definitely find me there at some point in time, no question about it. I would definitely look forward to shooting the breeze with you about sports or whatever is on your mind. And I just really appreciate you coming by to check me out. We got a lot to get into because it's been a long time. It's been a few weeks here since I've been back. And really, I think the last time that I, last episode was, you know, I was talking about Alabama losing to LSU. So that's been, I can tell you how long it's been. And, but we're going to, we're going to cover everything as much as we possibly can. There's a lot going on, man. I mean, when you think about everything going on in the NFL, the NBA, I mean, college basketball has begun since we joined you last. That's not even getting into the college football season, which is coming to a close as far as the regular season and everything. Championship Saturday has come and gone. And now we're ready for the bowls. We have the bowl matchups. We have the matchups for the playoff set. All of those things. Craziness. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. But first, I do want to, you know, just go over a couple quick things here before we get started. Because we're going to start off with this bowl thing, man, with the college football playoffs, New Year's Six, some of the bowl matchups from the SEC or whatever. We're going to get into all of that. We're going to get into this big-time coaching carousel, which is really centered around the state of Alabama in a lot of ways when you look at what's going on in Auburn and at UAB. And then, of course, you know we got to get into this Deion Sanders thing, Coach Prime. Jackson State, I got a lot to say about that, a lot on my mind about that situation. There are a lot of people that are upset. There are a lot of people that don't understand why people are upset. And then the people that are upset don't understand why the people, the other people, don't get why they're upset. If you can follow all that. It's crazy right now with Deion Sanders leaving Jackson State and heading to Colorado. So we're going to get into that definitely here a little bit later. And, you know, again, we're going to. There's a lot to get into, no doubt, but we're going to start off, man, with the Tennessee Titans. We're going to start off the NFL really quick, and the Titans right now sitting 7-5, still leaders of the AFC South, and I don't think that's going to change simply because of how things have gone. Obviously, sweeping Indianapolis was huge. Getting those two victories really started to scare me there. I don't know why. On Sunday night, looking at that football game in third quarter, knowing that the Titans had already lost, went down hard to Philadelphia earlier in the day, second consecutive loss by the Titans, and to see the Indianapolis Colts, who were 4-7-1, and now, you know, why are you sitting there looking at this thing now? Okay, all right. You're sitting there looking at the Titans, they're 7-5, or they were 7-4 coming into the day. So that means they were a full three games ahead of Indianapolis, and Indianapolis also had a tie because it's kind of weird that, you know, the Colts are just now about to take their bye week this coming week. So they had already played one more game than the Titans. But now the Titans lose that game to Philadelphia and now get to 7-5. And now you're looking at the Colts, who had, you know, they had gone down to Dallas and then they had scored that touchdown out of halftime. And I think they made it 20-19, or it was 21-19, something like that. Because if I remember correctly, they went for two to try to tie the game, if I'm not mistaken. And they were unsuccessful in that. And you were looking, I was looking at this thing like, okay, now I know we, and I'm a Titans fan, you know, put that out there if you haven't known that in the past, or if this is the first time you're listening to the show. I'm definitely a huge Titans fan, so I'm sitting there looking at this thing, and I'm like, okay, we're comfortably up in this division, no question about it, because we have the tiebreaker in our back pocket just in case, right? But I'm sitting there seeing the Colts playing with the Cowboys, and I'm like, okay, man, they win this game, they're two games behind the Titans. Now, I mean, there are only 5 weeks to go in the season. So, I mean, look, I mean, I think this thing is pretty secure, but anything can happen. So I'm like, man, you know, and then, like I said, I really had no reason to be afraid of anything. I had no reason to worry because the Cowboys went on one of the most amazing runs. I really didn't see all of it, but for them to put up, what was it, 35 points or 40 points, whatever it was, 37 points or whatever it was in the fourth quarter to just finish that obliteration of the Colts was definitely music to my ears. It was definitely brought a sigh of relief just in case, man, because even if the Colts had come back and tied the Titans for an overall record or whatever, we knew the Titans had the tiebreaker, so it was very small chances that the Colts would probably come back. And I mean, it's still mathematically not out of it, of course, but the Cowboys really made, you know, kind of put that away. This Colts team is just not that good. It's just that simple. Matt Ryan, that experiment or whatever you want to call it, them going out and getting him has been a colossal failure. So the Titans are good as far as that goes. So, you know, unless there's some really huge collapse and the Colts really get it together, because I don't think anyone else in the division, obviously Houston's not going to do it, and I don't think Jacksonville's going to be able to catch the Titans either. But, you know, it is, again, it is what it is. But looking at this football team, while they are definitely going to more than likely be in the playoffs, they have yet really to beat a really good team yet. And that is starting to become a little bit a huge topic around the NFL, around, you know, the media and everything. I think it's overblown just a little bit because let's not forget, I mean, again, the Titans did not finish the deal against Kansas City. No, they surely did not. But they were in that football game, and mind you, they were in that football game with Malik Willis as the quarterback. Okay, so, I mean, let's not act like they cannot compete with some of the better teams in this league. Although they definitely did not do it this past Sunday, Jalen Hurts. And, of course, Antonio Brown had their way. You knew Antonio Brown was going to be hyped up for this matchup against his old team. He greeted the Titans with two touchdowns, and let's just hope all of that's out of his system or whatever, because, you know, just in case we have to face them again here in the coming years or whatever. I guess it'll probably be a little while before we face the Eagles again. But again, look, I'm not really as worried about it as a lot of other people are, and that includes people in the Titans circles, the Titans fan base. Obviously, it's a big-time concern. You're looking at this team, this Titans team. The biggest question, again, like I said, is can they beat someone of any substance? Probably, I guess you look back right now, probably their best win was the win at Green Bay. Packers are playing a lot better right now. So that, you know, I think that should make you feel a little bit better if you're a Titans fan, in my opinion. But, you know, it's the talent level of this football team has definitely been a question. There's no question about that. Now, we gave up A.J. Brown, and I said Antonio Brown earlier. I got mixed up because he's been in the news as well. I'm not going to even get into that, man. But I meant A.J. Brown, so I do apologize for that. But giving up A.J. Brown draft night and then going out and drafting Treylon Burks was a huge story. We all know about that. And Treylon Burks has been coming along quite nicely the last few weeks. Now, he's had his injury issues where he was out several weeks, but he had a couple of huge catches in each of the last two games before this past Sunday. And I think he went over 100 yards in the game against Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken. So Treylon Burks has been coming along. So A.J. Brown, hopefully he's gotten that out of his system or whatever, or at least the Titans have gotten him out of the system, because I think Treylon Burks, maybe he will not be A.J. Brown, but I think he's going to be a guy that we're going to be able to rely on going forward. The unfortunate part about that was he had the injury on this past Sunday, which I think hurt the Titans, because he scored the touchdown there on that drive to tie the game up at 7. But on the touchdown, he got hit and he had to go into concussion protocol. So I'm not really sure his status exactly right now. Obviously, he'll probably be out this week. I think we have the Jacksonville Jaguars coming up this weekend, so we'll see how that goes. But the one thing I am happy to see, though, I think we're seeing that progress with Treylon Burks kind of being that guy. Now, the Titans need other guys, and that is the problem right now, and that problem may have been addressed today. As John Robinson, the GM, has been let go. He has been fired by the Titans organization. A lot of people have been calling for that move, and they get that move today by the Titans. John Robinson is history, and so not sure which direction they'll go for the general manager spot now, but I think that is a move that will help this football team in the future. Again, look, we know what this football team is. It's Derrick Henry, it's play action passing, and then of course defensively is, you know, it's this player is good enough defense as you can. Now we've had some big time issues in the secondary. Last couple games with the pass rush, which had been awesome for so many games this past season, has kind of seemingly left us now. But I think that'll be okay. We've had some injuries up front as well. Again, there are just so many moving parts with this whole thing, but all in all, I think the Titans are still on solid footing. It's just getting some more, you know, big-time players at skill positions, I think, is what is really needed on this team, and I think they'll get someone in that will be able to address that. For me, man, you know, 7-5 right now, you're leading the division. I think you're pretty much knowing you're going to have a playoff spot. The wild card game right now, more than likely, with you leading the division, is going to be in Nashville. Of course, now we know the problems, the issues the Titans have had securing home field in the playoffs. That is not, may not be a good thing, but I'm not giving up on this team. I do think that they can compete against some of the upper echelon teams if they, you know, again, I think it's up really to the defense right now. That's what it's up to, and the defense did not answer the bell on Sunday. But look back, they answered the bell against the Kansas City Chiefs a few weeks ago. So, and again, you get to the playoffs, man, anything can happen. It's just about getting there. You saw what happened with the Cincinnati Bengals just this past season. The Titans almost did it in 2020, losing to Kansas City there in that AFC Championship game. That was a team no one thought would get that far. They ended up beating the Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens on the way to that championship game. So, look, if you're a Titans fan, I think you should be definitely concerned. I think they are, obviously, this firing of John Robinson, the organization is obviously hearing you, but I think you should be optimistic, man, that this team, once we get some of these guys healthy on the defensive end and hopefully get Treylon Burks back, I think this team is going to be a little bit more dangerous than a lot of people think that it is. Anyway, man, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to get into the college football playoff. We're getting to Deion Sanders. All of that when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. We're back in. Ball About the South continues, and we're going to get into the college football playoff, the four teams that are going to go for this 2022, I guess you call it the 2022 championship, even though the championship won't be decided until 2023. We know those four teams, after a lot of debating, a lot of back and forth on Twitter and social media as a whole. A lot of the chatter on there was really wild, man. It was really good being in some of those debates. If you don't know, yeah, again, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, this episode, or whatever, I am a humongous Alabama fan. Roll Tide to all my Roll Tiders out there listening. But always, man, since I've been 8, 9 years old, I've been an Alabama fan. My dad was a huge Bama fan, so it just kind of rubbed off on me. And, you know, I've been a diehard ever since. I'm not one of these bandwagoners at all. So, obviously, I took up for Alabama to a degree. Not necessarily because I thought that they necessarily deserved to be in the top four. It was just, you know, you just don't never know what the committee's going to come up with to a degree. And, until, basically, being a Bama fan, I think most of us had pretty much given up on the playoff after old dude caught that tight end caught that touchdown. Well, I'm sorry, the two-point conversion in overtime. We thought it was over then. I mean, I was at peace. I mean, obviously, I was pissed off that night. I was mad that night that it had happened like that, especially the LSU. Oh, no. We don't like losing the LSU around here, especially, you know, when it set them up to go to Atlanta and represent the Western SEC Championship game. Oh, no, we don't like that type of stuff around here. But, you know, after I slept on it and everything, I was, you know, I'm like, look, man, we've been in all these playoffs before. Nick Saban's won 6 national championships since he's been here. I have witnessed 7 myself. The 92 championship, and I was almost around, kind of halfway can remember the one before that, which was, you know, it's not as huge a deal as some people try to make it out to be. But, again, if you're going to have an opportunity to have your team go, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, so if the committee had afforded us that, that benefit or whatever, I mean, hey, we would have taken it. No question about it. But there's no question. I think that the committee got the 4 teams correct. I think they have the way that they have the matchups correct. They have, obviously, number 1 seed Georgia facing off against Ohio State. And then they have the number 2 seed, the Michigan Wolverines, champions of the Big Ten. Huge win over Ohio State a couple weeks ago. And they have them facing the number 3 seed TCU Horned Frogs. So they got it right. I don't think there's any question about it. The only thing I would say, man, you know, if you're Georgia and everything that everyone said about Ohio State coming into this season and really the last several seasons, I mean, Ohio State has been one of the top 2 or 3 teams just about every season. And for Georgia to have that, them being the number 1 seed and then for them to draw a talented team like that is probably the only thing that I kind of look at and I'm like, I don't know. But on the flip side of that, you couldn't match up Michigan and Ohio State. Okay, you just couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. I mean, I don't think that would have been made much sense to, you know, with them with Ohio State going down as hard as they did at the Horseshoe just, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever. week and a half ago. I just don't think it would have been right for those two teams to play in the playoff. You know, if they play, if they meet, if both those teams win, they meet in the national championship game, that is a totally different story. But again, I congratulate those teams. But again, this, you see what I'm talking about with that, because with Georgia being the number one team, you're supposed to have the easier matchup, right? And that was another thing that came up, you know, in, at least in my mind and some other people's minds on Twitter. I'm like, you know, can they match up Georgia and Ohio State? Could they match up Michigan and Ohio State? And I think, you know, obviously the Georgia-Ohio State game made much more sense, but who knows? Could they sit there and say, you know what, man, you know, these matchups don't make much sense, so we're going to match up, you know, maybe they throw Alabama into the mix. So those are the things that, you know, we just did not know what the outcome was going to be until Sunday morning. But again, I think that they got it correct, no question about it. But the one thing, I'll tell you what, before I kind of get into these matchups just a little bit, man, the one thing that I really didn't, as a Bama fan, I get the hate, because, you know, people hate the New York Yankees. And why do they hate the Yankees? Because they won all those championships. They always had the best players. Why do the people hate the L.A. Lakers? Same reason. Boston Celtics, the Chicago Bulls, back when they were winning so many championships. Whoever, you, whatever team you want to throw out there, they're going to have hate like that, and I get it. But all of that, you know, all the committee just loves Alabama. Why shouldn't the committee love Alabama? Why should they hate Alabama? I'm not understanding. Because I just never thought that this was about, oh, well, they're just going to find a way. They're just going to find a way to magically put Alabama in this playoff. No, it doesn't work like that. I don't think it's ever worked like that, because even the times where Alabama's kind of slid in the back door, a couple of other times, teams lost to set that up. I mean, there was one season, I know it was Iowa State. Iowa State had passed Alabama. I think this was back in the BCS era. It might have been after LSU beat Alabama in 2011. Iowa State lost the game, and they lost it handily to whoever they lost to. Same thing, I think the next season, it was Oklahoma State. This was the season, should have been 2012, where Alabama lost to Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel and all of that. And Alabama made the playoff. I mean, made the BCS championship game and blew Notre Dame out or whatever. Teams lost to set those scenarios up, man. I mean, again, and that is the way this system works. It's just the system. Don't be mad. I mean, yeah, we can be mad at Alabama. There's no problem with that. But be more mad at the system. The system has always frowned on teams that lose late in the season. It's just the way it goes. So we had to hear all of this about Tennessee. Oh, Tennessee beat y'all and all that. Yeah, and we get that. No one's disputing that. But again, they lost a game that, and it was late in the season. It gave them their second loss of the season. It took them out of where they had already been taken out of the running for the SEC championship game. It's just the way it is. That's not Alabama's fault. That's the system. And it's always been like that. Ohio State, well, you know, there's been another team that's benefited from that in the past. I don't seem to, you know, maybe it wasn't as, Twitter wasn't as popular back then. I'm not really sure. But I don't remember hearing all of that I heard about Alabama this season. I don't know. Anyway, the love for Alabama was not what everybody thought it was. And quite frankly, I'm glad to see it, because, man, I'm just like, man, can y'all please kind of just chill on all of that? I mean, seriously. Anyway, let's get into these. Like I said, we've got Georgia facing the Ohio State Buckeyes. And I'm going to be real with you, man. And maybe I'm just looking through this whole thing with my SEC glasses. You know, I'm an SEC guy. No question about it. I have not been impressed with Ohio State for a lot of the season. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, C.J. Stroud looks like a really good quarterback. Struggled at the wrong time against Michigan, of course. But overall, I think this guy's a really good player. Obviously, they have talent up and down their lineup. I don't know. It's just something missing. Not really sure what it is, and I'm just not have felt it really, not just this season, really the last two or three seasons. Maybe it's Ryan Day. I'm not the biggest Ryan Day fan. It's not to say that he's doing a bad job, and I certainly don't agree with these Ohio State Buckeye fans that feel like he needs to be fired. I mean, this dude has, what, lost three games since he took over? You know, they have a Big Ten championship. They've been in the playoff, which is going to be for the second time. Now, since he's taken over, you don't fire dudes for that, okay? But I'm just talking, you know, from what I see. Obviously, you wonder what was going to be the case, if it was going to be a big time drop from or big step down from where Urban Meyer had. And obviously, it's not been a big time step down. There's no question about it. It has not been. But things maybe don't quite seem the same. So I look at this matchup, man, and I think Georgia is a team that is very good defensively. I mean, Ohio State had trouble with Michigan in that game up there in, at the Horseshoe. I mean, if that is going to be the measuring stick, I don't know what to expect for them to do against Georgia's defense. I just really don't. I really don't. And I think Georgia's offense is a team that they step up to the moment. I don't think it's a great offense. I do think Stetson Bennett continues to be undervalued. I'm not really sure I agree with him being invited to New York for the Heisman ceremonies. I'm not on board with that one. I'm going to be real with you. But I'm not going to sit here and come down on the dude, though, the way a lot of people have in the past. I think he's a good, serviceable guy. I think he can make plays when he needs to make them. He certainly made them against Alabama last season. So there's that. I just don't see a way. I mean, obviously, look, when you have the talent that we know Ohio State has, obviously there's a way, so I'm not going to sit here and say that. Other than that, man, I think Georgia wins this game. I think they win it handily. And, yeah, we'll see how things go, because I think that gets me to the, you know, when you're talking about Ohio State and you're talking about Big Ten, I don't think it's as much. I think while Ohio State has dropped off a little bit, I don't think it's that they've dropped off. I think it's that the Michigan Wolverines have stepped it up. Jim Harbaugh was on his last leg there, if that. He had one leg off the cliff and the other on a banana peel just a couple seasons ago, and he has quickly turned it around there in Ann Arbor. And that team up north is really, I think the balance of power has shifted in Big Ten. I don't think it's any question. I mean, obviously, you sit there and you see that they won two in a row, and they won both those games by double digits. I mean, going away. So, obviously, you sit there and you look at that and know that Michigan's won the last two games. Obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, okay, you know what, they, you know, maybe the supremacy has shifted in the Big Ten, has shifted to the north, from Ohio to Michigan. But I think really seriously, when you dig deeper than that, I think this Michigan program has now probably surpassed where Ohio State is. But I think before we can definitively say that, Michigan's going to have to at least win a game in the playoff. Now, it's something Ryan Day's team has done. They did win a playoff game back in the COVID season before Alabama beat them in 2021. So Michigan, I think, at least needs to win a game. They have to beat TCU to be able to cement that, in my opinion. For that supremacy to really change hands from Ohio State to Michigan, I think they really have to beat TCU. And I don't think it's going to be as easy as a lot of people think it's going to be. I think this TCU team is really good. Dugan, I like him at quarterback. I mean, he's not the greatest. I see he's being invited to New York as well. I like the running backs. TCU has always been known for their defense. Obviously, their former coach, Gary Patterson, and that was his staple. I mean, he had some really good defenses there in his tenure. I think you look at this football team, man, I think that they can hang in this game against Michigan. I just really do. Obviously, them being in the Big 12, we can sit here and pick apart that league as much as we want to. We don't know how good the competition really is in that league. I think we all agree with that. But you sit there and you look at a lot of their games going down to the wire, them being able to pull off those games. I think that's huge. Even though you'd like to see them being more dominant to a degree, I think it's something to be said for them to be able to pull out these games at the end of games as well. Being able to, when they had to make a play, whether it be on the defensive or offensive side, because that offense the other day was able to get them to that overtime, which I think that was the thing that got them in definitely 100% over Alabama, was when they were able to come back, cut that lead, and then eventually tie it up and send it to overtime. I think that the committee, I don't know, but I think the committee probably, that's what they wanted to see. They wanted to see them be able to make that comeback, and they were able to do it. I think there's a lot to be said there. I think they may be the most battle-tested team of the four teams that are in this playoff. So I think there's something to be said for that. So, again, I'm not sitting here picking TCU. I'm not going to pick either of these games just yet. We'll do that later on. But I think TCU has a shot in this football game against Michigan. Now, that's no slight against Michigan. I don't mean it to sound like that, because I think I've propped up Michigan here a little bit. I mean, Jim Harbaugh, you have to give him his props. That program is definitely on the upswing. He has done a fantastic job, and I think they are at the top of the Big Ten. But I do think this TCU team has a chance to make that game interesting there in the desert, where they'll be playing that game in Arizona. So, yeah, a lot to get into, man. And we'll talk about some of these other bowl matchups. Alabama's bowl matchup, of course, they get to the Sugar Bowl to face Kansas State. Tennessee, without Hendon Hooker, of course. That is going to be a wild sight, man. I'm not the biggest fan of the color orange, so I don't know if I can watch this game. Obviously, I'm not a big fan of the color orange, but our two biggest rivals wear orange in their uniforms. Talking about Tennessee and Auburn, Tennessee and Clemson in the Orange Bowl is just wild to me. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you put it like that. But it's gonna be a lot of orange. It's gonna be really bright there in the stadium in Miami on that night. And then LSU, they get to the Citrus Bowl and they will face Purdue, which should be an interesting football game as well. Purdue was the other participant in the Big Ten Championship as they went down to Michigan the other night. So those are just a few of the bowl games. We'll talk a lot more about some of the other ones, man, as we go forward, if we get closer to those matchups going down. Let's get to a couple of these coaching carousel. And I think it would be, we'll start off right here in town, UAB, the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And I don't call them that very often. I just like to keep it UAB because so many people just wore out that Alabama-Birmingham thing for so long. But UAB makes a big-time hire, bringing in Trent Dilfer. Now, this one came out of, I said forget left field. How that saying goes. This one came out of left field on us because it was a surprise or whatever. This one came out, forget left field. This one came out of the alley next to the parking lot next to the stadium. I mean, no one saw Trent Dilfer being the head coach of UAB. This dude's coaching high school up here in Tennessee. And UAB's coaching search, you know, they were looking for someone proven. And I guess he's a proven winner. I guess you could say he's won two state championships, but he's never coached in college. So that's going to be an interesting marriage there. But I think when you get down and break it down, with UAB headed to the American, which is obviously a big deal, maybe not as big a bigger deal as it would have been when they lose Cincinnati and Central Florida and all of those in Houston next season, but it's still a step up from where they are in Conference USA. And I think this team needs something that can really put them over the top, that can really bolster them a little bit more. Because this, you know, this team, they won their Conference USA championships here. They've been in the conference championship game. They've been to bowls here for several straight seasons and all of that. But it always just seems like this program has a little bit more potential than it's being it's kind of been realized. Trent Dilfer, again, while he has never coached a college football game in his life, this dude's got connections. I mean, he is the coach of the Elite 11. He has been an evaluator, big-time evaluator of quarterbacks over the years. If he can kind of turn some of those guys to come to Birmingham and be a UAB Blazer, who knows what could happen with this football team, with this program. Brand-new stadium, downtown, and all of that. I think UAB is a sleeping giant, and a hire like this that's kind of outside the box could be just a thing to kind of wake that up. We'll see how it goes. And again, it could go the other way. It could be a total disaster. I mean, it's no telling. The other big-time hire here in the state of Alabama, and there are other hires we're going to get into as well over the weeks, but there's still some openings out there as well, but Hugh Freeze leaving Liberty University to come to the Auburn Tigers was humongous news, obviously, around here. Not a big-time surprise. We knew that Hugh Freeze was probably a candidate when this whole search started. And now that he is in here, it is really very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see how this thing turns out. I mean, again, we're talking about a guy that's really no one really thought that they were going to let him back in the SEC with everything that went on at Ole Miss. We know about the calls to the call girls or whatever it was. And then, of course, that's not to mention the allegations that, you know, that put the football team on probation as well. They missed bowl games and all of that, vacated dub wins and everything, lost scholarships and all that. And a lot of that was on him. So, obviously, he's been successful at Liberty, and we know what type of track record this dude has. We know that he was successful at Ole Miss. He brought in and brought some really exciting times to them. He beat Nick Saban twice, which I think, you know, don't sit there and forget about that tidbit when you sit there and think about Auburn hiring this guy. So, again, it has a lot of potential. There's no question about it. And this, and you sit there and look at Auburn, man, they've always kind of hired kind of out of the box like this. So this guy fits that, and it's worked for them. It has absolutely worked for Auburn. There's no question about it. So we'll see what happens, man. It's going to be very interesting here in the state of Alabama with those two hires. We'll see how it goes. The other big-time hire, the other big-time coaching move, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, going from Jackson State to Colorado. You're talking about another one that kind of a little bit, you know, was kind of eyebrow-raising, kind of jaw-dropping to see him go from Jackson State to Colorado, the Colorado Buffaloes, the 1-11. Colorado Buffaloes in the Pac-12, which is about to become the Pac-10 again here in just a couple years when USC and UCLA leave for the Big Ten. Very interesting move by Deion Sanders. We're going to talk about that after the break when Ball About the South continues. Okay, y'all, we're back in. Ball About the South continues. Before I get into my Deion Sanders talk, and as you can see, the title of this particular episode is Unfinished Prime. And I'll get into why I call it that once I get, you know, into my Deion Sanders Coach Prime talk or whatever here in just a few minutes. But I just wanted to say that I'm really happy to see that Brittany Griner, it has been announced that she has been released from the prison there, penal colony or whatever you call it over there in Russia. And I'm just happy to hear that. I really am. For me, I think that she was wrongfully held over there this long, wrongfully detained. I don't think there's any question about that. And I'm happy to hear that she is on her way home. And I think that is a really good piece of news, man. Really good piece of news. A lot of people are going to be happy about it. Of course, you're going to have a lot of critics out there at the same time. First, you know, you have, first of all, there, you know, there are several things that a lot of people are going to kind of point at as why this is not a good thing. One, they released a Russian prisoner in exchange for her, Victor Bout, I think is his name, Russian arms dealer or something, or terrorist or whatever. So they decided to basically swap him for her, Biden and his administration or whatever did. Obviously, you got a lot of people that are upset because there are still Americans that are still over there. One is a Marine. Paul Whelan, I think is his name, is one that's been mentioned many times in this Brittany Griner case. And he still will remain over there, which obviously is a big-time issue. And I hate to hear that so many Americans are being detained over there. So while this is a definite huge victory, I think, for Brittany Griner and for her family, you know, it's not a good thing for some other families that have loved ones over there as well. Now, I will say that the Whelan family did come out and say that they were happy that Brittany was coming home. And so, you know, and I think that was a really classy measure by them as their loved one still remains over there. But another reason that you continue to hear about Brittany Griner and why she probably should not have been released, let's just be real about it. A lot of people don't like that she is a member of the LGBTQ community. And that's, you know, that's just point blank. And, you know, and then, of course, she's a black woman that's playing in the WNBA. That just kind of adds fuel to that fire for some of these people. So I get it. I mean, I get that everyone should want everyone to be released from over there that's an American or whatever. I'm all for that. But in my opinion, we shouldn't be sitting here, hating on anyone that's celebrating the release of Brittany Griner. It's just my thoughts on that. So again, I'm really glad that BG is on her way home, and she'll be welcomed back greatly. And hopefully, I'm not really sure, but hopefully she'll be able to play in the WNBA coming up this next season. That'd be great. But again, we have to keep our minds and our eyes on everyone else that remained detained over there in places like Russia. Because, I mean, look, man, you can sit there and say all you want to about, oh, well, she did the crime, she needs to pay the time. But we all know that turned political. That we know that turned political in a country like that, that we know has, we've had issues with for all these decades or whatever. They can make something that small into something a lot bigger. And it just should not be that way. So, again, I'm glad she's on her way home. One other thing I was going to mention real quick. I was talking about the college football playoff, and I just mentioned the Heisman Trophy really quick. You know, I really kind of feel for Hendon Hooker not being invited to New York after he was one of the guys. Well, he was the guy that was at the top of the list for the Heisman there for a good while. And I just hate it for him, man. I just wanted to kind of mention that. Again, Stetson Bennett, this dude, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he should not be in New York. I've said that, but I think that he probably has a good case because of what he's done over the last couple of years. That's one thing I did not put into that last segment. This, you know, I understand this is we're talking about this season, but I thought Stetson Bennett really had a really good season last year. Not a Heisman Trophy worthy season or anything like that, but he put up better numbers this year. And so with his team being only lost one game in these last two seasons, I think you really sit there and kind of think about it. I kind of don't have a problem with him being invited to New York as well when I kind of put it in that aspect. Anyway, man, but I do really feel for Hendon Hooker. That was very disappointing for him and the Tennessee fan base, I'm sure. Anyway, man, we're going to get into this Deion conversation. And I could probably talk an hour about this, but I'm going to try to condense it as much as I possibly can. Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, has been the coach there at Jackson State for the last, I guess, would be three seasons. Would have been three seasons. COVID took the first season away, and Jackson State decided not to play in that spring season. They decided not to play in SWAC that season. Alabama A&M ended up winning the championship that year. And so the SWAC has gone to Jackson State each of the last two seasons. And Prime has done a magnificent job at Jackson State, man. Just, you know, it cannot be understated just how good a job he's done there. He has put that school on the map. He has done a lot by putting that school on the map. I think that he has elevated things there at that school, not just the athletic department, but I think the school as a whole. And I think in the city of Jackson, Mississippi. I don't think there's any question about that. So you have to give him a round of applause. You have to give him all the credit in the world for that. I don't think there's any question about it. But you see what I say, what I have the title of this episode named as, and I have Unfinished Prime. And as Jackson State was kind of getting into their prime with Coach Prime being their head coach, everything was really looking up. And I'm not sitting here telling you that everything that's looking up right now about that program should just automatically be eliminated. Now they just start just hanging their heads because they've lost Deion Sanders and everything goes back to the status quo that it was before Deion Sanders got there. That's not what I'm trying to say. I just think that while Deion Sanders had every right to move on to something better for his family, for himself. He had every right to do that. There's no question about that. And I think if you really look at it the correct way, I think you should be proud of him. You should be proud of what he's accomplished and that he's been able to do something that very few black men have been able to do, and that's be a head coach in HBCU ranks. And then make it to the Division I ranks, or the FBS, as it's called right now. Matter of fact, a power school, Power 5 school. So I think you have to sit there and you have to put that out there and say those things about Deion. But the thing that's going to linger here about his time there at Jackson State is I think it's going to feel a little bit unfinished, maybe a little bit unfulfilled, despite is the amount of good that he did. And I'm going to explain to you why. And I think this is what has a lot of people upset that he made the move up to the job there at Colorado. You sit there and think about where the program was before he got there. Obviously, it's a lot better off than it was. Well, it's a lot better off as he leaves. There's no question about it. But the thing that a lot of people are going to sit there and go back to is his introductory press conference. And he was delivering every one of those promises. He was delivering on every one of them. You know, he was bringing in talent that the Alabamas and the Ohio States or whoever would want. Travis Hunter being one of those guys that flipped his recruitment or flipped his signature from Florida State to Jackson State. Ironically, Florida State being Deion's alma mater. He did that. He brought some players in out of the transfer portal, and he was on his way to doing that even more this coming season. His son, Shedeur Sanders, got an NIL deal worth, I think, $1 million or whatever. They are Jackson State University, an HBCU, a historically black college and university. But what now? He did all of those things. Sellouts of the stadium there in Jackson, Mississippi, 60,000 strong. He has, they have they're about to build a new stadium there for the Jackson State football program, which is sorely needed. I mean, that stadium there in Mississippi is extremely old. They were going to build a brand new stadium there. But what now? And that's the thing that a lot of people are upset about, because he laid the foundation. He laid a lot of the foundation, but I don't know if he laid the foundation completely. Because, again, the thing that we have to get back to when you're sitting there thinking about Deion, and, you know, a lot of the work, you know, this guy is only one guy. He's only one dude. And he can't do it all by himself, even though he was the catalyst for moving this program forward. He was the catalyst for getting HBCUs a little bit more on the map. He, you know, they had game day come to Jackson, Mississippi for Jackson and Southern. That had never been done before, or maybe it done maybe been done once or twice by for an HBCU or whatever. Very rare have we seen that. And he made that happen. And he didn't do it all by himself, but he was absolutely the catalyst. And obviously, he couldn't continue that work by himself. He was going to need everyone else in the HBCU community to help him out. And to, you know, not just at Jackson State, but whatever school it was, whether it was Grambling, Southern, FAMU, Bethune-Cookman, Morehouse, Tennessee State, whatever school it was. The problem is, no one has that charisma. No one has that it factor that draws people to them like a Deion had. No one has those connections, because let's not act like there aren't good coaches in HBCU ranks. There are a lot of them. There have been plenty of NFL coaches. I'm sorry, NFL players or NFL former NFL assistant coaches that are head coaches in the HBCU ranks. Eddie Robinson Jr. there at Alabama State. Okay, Eddie George at Tennessee State. You got Hugh Jackson there at Grambling. Bubba McDowell at Prairie View A&M. You have, you know, Fred McNair, now his brother, obviously, the great Steve McNair, there at Alcorn State. And on and on and on. There's been so many of them over the years. Back to guys like Doug Williams. And, you know, the list goes on and on. So it's not like Deion was the first, you know, of that kind to, you know, first NFL player or whatever that took over an HBCU. But he was the first one that's really had those connections where he could make a difference. And while he made a big-time difference there at Jackson State in these 2.5 or 3 seasons, however you want to say it, the job seems a little bit unfinished. And now he's off to Colorado to coach the Buffaloes there. And not only is he off to Colorado, but some of the players – that he said he wanted to kind of flip. He wanted to flip that mindset or that narrative that you had to go to a PWI, a predominantly white institution like Alabama, like Georgia, like Michigan or whatever. He wanted to flip that narrative that you had to do that to get your shot at the NFL, to get your shot at a really good education, things of that nature, that you had to go there to those schools to have the best facilities. He wanted to change that narrative. And while he did a lot to help start that narrative, a lot of that remains unfinished. And I think that is why so many people are upset with Deion. But again, he's only one person. So what is going to be done from now on? Because it's great to sit there and look at what he's done right now, but is it going to have a lasting effect? That is the question. That is the question. And that is why so many people are upset. So many people feel, a little bit unfulfilled, I think would be a good word. Just a little bit. So I don't know. Hopefully the foundation that he has laid, someone will cultivate it, someone will come along and they will build upon that. These universities, the university administrations at each one will say they'll look at what Jackson State was doing, because that was already going on. I mean, schools in the SWAC and the MEAC and all of that, you had no choice but to look at what Jackson State was doing, because if you didn't, you would never have been able to compete with them. So they were already, I think, had those things in motion. But now we sit there and see Deion leave and go for something that looks better. What happens now? And again, that goes against everything that Deion said as he came in to start coaching this program. He wanted the HBCU to be the destination instead of the stepping stone. And fortunately for him, his family, don't get me wrong, you have to be happy for him and proud of him for being able to make that step up. But it's a little bit unfortunate that he is the one that kind of made Jackson State his stepping stone. So I don't know. Just a little bit of unfinished business there. He was right. I mean, he took that job there at Colorado. He had the introductory press conference there. I'm going to be real with you. I didn't like some of the things that he said in that press conference. I'm just going to have to put it out there. I mean, he mentioned how beautiful Boulder, Colorado is, and he mentioned it four or five times in that interview or in that press conference, if you go back and listen to it. And I'm not saying that Boulder, Colorado is not beautiful, but it's going to rub a lot of people probably the wrong way, is that, okay, well, the reason why you're saying this is so beautiful is because what you're leaving behind isn't. And I think that is the issue that a lot of people have. That is, and it just compounds everything. Again, let's not put it all on him, though. This is all on the administrations of our HBCUs. But it's just a much harder job than anyone wants to give it credit for. All say, well, he left, but he laid that foundation. You just have to move on with it. Well, yeah, but it wasn't that easy before him, and I don't think it's going to be as easy after him either. These HBCU programs are so underfunded, and that is a huge issue that was starting to become – and after, it was starting to become, hey, you know what, you're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe this thing is going to work out. So, again, his being gone means the work gets, doesn't stop. And, as a matter of fact, it gets a little bit harder. That's the way you have to look at it. I think, these HBCUs, in my opinion, have to put more of an emphasis on athletics, on the athletic aspect, not athletics over education or anything like that. I mean, basically, like at a football game, you know, let's be real about it. They treat it like it's the band competition. And, okay, well, and then there's a football game. Instead of we're going to the football game and then there's a band competition at halftime. We kind of have it reversed a lot. The support from the alumni, the fans, the community has got to get better. And that's one thing he was starting to really, really, really change. But who's going to be able to finish that? Who's going to be able to step in and take the baton and finish with that foundation that he laid? Because I don't think he really finished the foundation, really. He did a lot with the foundation, but I don't think he fully finished it. And that's why I named this Unfinished Prime. I mean, Jackson State was in its prime. This is as prime as it's ever been for Jackson State University in their athletic program. But unfortunately, it feels just a little bit unfinished. So, those are just my thoughts on Deion Sanders, Coach Prime going to Colorado again. I could probably talk about this for a couple of hours if I really sat here and did it. Again, more power to the brother. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy for him. It is definitely a step that a lot of our brothers have not made, and I'm definitely proud of that. But it just feels like a little bit of unfinished business there in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's not just the Celebration Bowl that's coming up next week against North Carolina Central. By the way, on my next episode, we're talking about that game a lot closer as it comes, we'll give my picks and all of that for that game. Anyway, man, we're going to take a quick break. Be right back. We're going to talk some college basketball and a little bit of NBA. When Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. Ball About the South continues on. And like I said, we're going to close out the show with this segment. I'm going to get into some hoops. But first, before I do that, I'm going to just go a little bit deeper on Deion just for a minute. I got a question, man. Do we really know how good a head coach Deion Sanders is? I think that is a question that needs to be asked. And I don't think it's being asked enough. I mean, I hear some people kind of alluding to the fact that JSU, Jackson State University, has they've had a decided advantage in just about every game they played. They've beaten really, sit down and look at it, man. They really haven't beaten anyone outside of the SWAC, except for Tennessee State. They won two games against Tennessee State in these last two seasons against Eddie George and that team. They have a couple other wins here and there they're really teams that are a little bit lower in division than they are. And that's about it. That's about it. Let's just be real about it. So I'm just wondering, man, because you sit there and think about what Jackson State was doing schedule-wise. I mean, they did play Louisiana Monroe last season and played them to a tight game. They lost that game 12-10. Really, I remember that game pretty well. They really had some chances to win that game. Louisiana Monroe is a Division I-A team, or FBS team, as they call it now. So that was a pretty good deal for them. They didn't, unfortunately, could not finish the deal. I think Shadur threw an interception or they had a turnover late in that game, something like that. And then they had the South Carolina State game last season in the Celebration Bowl. And, of course, now this season they're going to play North Carolina Central. But other than that, man, just to be real about it, man, I mean, they have had a decided advantage in just about every game that they have played. If they did not have a decided advantage, they had an advantage. Because I say probably the only games I would say that – the playing field was kind of level would have been the FAMU games. Oh, you know, FAMU and even FAMU does not have the firepower. They do not have the recruits that Jackson State has. So, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. And again, that kind of gets back to the disappointment, because I was always kind of one I was of the thought that Jackson State was going to step up the schedule here sooner or later. I mean, obviously you couldn't expect that in first two seasons. But I thought maybe like year three, year four, year five, something like that, we would see the schedule amped up a little bit. We all know about, you know, there was a big question about would Jackson State play Alabama or whatever. And Deion came out with the answer saying, no, we're not going to sit there and put our kids at stake for a check or whatever. And look, we understood all of that because he knew he would get murdered up front. I mean, at the line of scrimmage. And everybody understands that. Okay, there's no problem with that. But there are a couple of other games, at least one other game that I know of that was mentioned very prominently. Now, I'm not 100% sure of everything, of all the reporting that I heard on this. So I don't want to sit here and just be too judgmental. But we sat here and there was a lot of reports on North Dakota State offering a home-and-home series, a home-and-home matchup against Jackson State. And reportedly, Deion turned it down. I mean, how big would that have been? Now, I understand he got game day to come down for the Southern game a few weeks ago, but, I mean, if there was another game made for college game day in the FCS ranks, it would have been that game. And depending on what week they had played that game, let's just say hypothetically they would have played it. Oh yeah, game day there would have been a good shot that game day would have been there. And I was doing, while all that was going on, I was seeing people like, oh, why would we want to go up to North Dakota and all that? And their stadium, which is kind of like a dome or whatever, only seats 19,000, 20,000 people or something like that. I mean, what do we want to go up there for and all that? And I'm just like, I don't understand. What are you talking about? I mean, we're talking about a possible home-and-home series. Obviously, we're not talking about playing this game this season, and probably not even next season, because I'm sure all your schedules are pretty much set up. That's the way the college football works. These schedules are set up at least a year or two in advance. I don't understand. And if we had had that matchup, let's say when Shadur was a senior, I mean, are you kidding me? Do you realize how big that game would have been? But we never got to see any matchups like that at Jackson State. And that, again, is one of the biggest things that bothers me about it. I think it bothers a lot of other people about Deion Sanders' exit. But again, the biggest thing that I bring up right here, and again, I'm not saying that Deion cannot coach. Don't say I said he can't coach. I'm not saying that. Obviously, you sit there and you take your team to two undefeated seasons in the SWAC. I don't care what the circumstances are. I don't care how much more talented your team is. You're doing something right. So I'm not. And then we sit there and you look up and this dude is only coaching his second or third season. His second full season is just now ending. So obviously this is a guy that's going to get better as a coach as time goes on. So I'm not sitting here saying anything that he can't coach and that he's not going to be an excellent coach down the road. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying right here today, do we know that Deion Sanders is really a good coach? We know he can recruit, but can he coach that thing up? I'm not saying he can. I think that he can, absolutely. But I still have a doubt because we really haven't seen him in a situation where the matchups are pretty even. So we're going to get to see it pretty quickly here once he hits the field with the Colorado Buffaloes coming up next season. And I'll tell you, they're throwing that $5 million out there to him. So, hey. Now, to be truthful, $5 million is really not that much money in college now. I mean, you're talking about Jimbo Fisher making over $9 million. Lane Kiffin just lost four games at Ole Miss, and now he's making like $9 million. So look, $5 million is not the money that it used to be. Anyway, just food for thought. Y'all let me know what you think on Twitter and whatever, man. Let me know what you think about, is Deion really that great a coach? Anyway, man, like I said, we're going to get into just some hoops for just a few minutes before we close this thing out. Start out with a little bit of college with the SEC and Alabama. Alabama has a humongous road game tomorrow at number one Houston. Alabama Crimson Tide is 7-1 on the season. The only loss was to UConn there at the PK85, the Phil Knight Nike tournament there in Portland, Oregon. UConn put it on them that night, but other than that, Alabama filled themselves up pretty well. They beat Michigan State in that same tournament. They also beat North Carolina on a 4-overtime thriller in that tournament, 103-101. Baycott and Leaky Black, one of the best names in college basketball. All those dudes, man, they put them, they beat them in that basketball game. The team, of course, that really had the slow start last season and ended up getting super hot and rolled themselves all the way to the national championship game. You know, so definitely, definitely one of those things. And that was a huge matchup coming up against the Houston Cougars tomorrow. Kelvin Sampson doing a fantastic job with that basketball team. We know about them making the Final Four championship game a couple seasons ago. And now thinking about them, I think it was Sweet 16 run last season. They're ranked number one in the country right now. Kelvin Sampson is doing the job there with the Houston Cougars. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. Brandon Miller leading the way for Alabama. He's averaging around 19 points, 9 rebounds. He's real close to averaging like 20 and 10. It's not too far off of that. So, obviously, he has been kind of the star player. I think he's kind of dropped off a little bit here these last few games, but he is still the man for the Alabama Crimson Tide, even though he is a true freshman or whatever. Alabama has several true freshmen that are doing the thing. Guy Noah Clowney is really making a name for himself. The last time out, he had 22 points. I think he had a double-double. I think he had 10 or 11 rebounds in that game against South Dakota State. Really good around the rim, good rebounder. And I'm going to tell you right now, defensively, Alabama looks a lot better so far. And you have to put that caveat in there. So far than they looked last season. So much better, especially around the rim. And I think he is one of those guys that's helping out. Noah Clowney, we all had Charles Bediako, who was entering his sophomore season, the Canadian. Those guys around that rim have been doing the job. And even Brandon Miller, this dude, this is one of the things that makes Brandon Miller really look like a superstar in the making, because he does it on both ends of the floor. And I think another huge thing about Alabama is this team seems to finally have some depth at point guard. This team, man, they have had rarely in, really, I say, man, in the last 15, 20 years, I've been sitting here watching this basketball team, have they really had a lot of depth at the guard spot. There's always seemed to have been an issue, whether, you know, they've had some pretty big names, maybe names you may not know of, but Ronald Steele was one that was supposed to be maybe the best guard, point guard in the history of Alabama, whatever. He came in and really played well first couple of seasons. Then he looked like a for sure NBA type guy. Ended up having a major injury and ruined all of that. You had a guy like Maurice Williams, has played in the NBA for a long time, the Cavaliers and teams like that. But he was a one and doneer. So even though there was nothing that really happened to him, everything was good with him while he was at Alabama. He went on to have a really good professional career. He was only there for one season. You had Colin Sexton, again, another guy that was just there. He was a one and doneer. Other than that, Alabama has been really void of really good point guard depth, and I think they finally have that solved this season. We'll see how it goes. But Javon Quinterly is back from the team from the last couple seasons. He tore his ACL in the NCAA tournament last season, but he is back in full effect right now. You sit there and you look at a guy like Jaden Bradley, who is a this dude is a true freshman. But I'm telling you what, I believe he's going to end up being a one and done as well. I mean, he's not getting as much playing time right now. He's getting, well, let me put it like this. He's getting playing time, but he's not really one of the focal points. He's not, usually he's out there with Quinterly or he's out there with Mark Sears, the next guy that I'm going to talk about at the point guard position. And Mark Sears is a guy that's really become a really good shooter. He's at least a lot better shooter than I thought that he was. He was a transfer that Alabama picked up out of the portal. So Alabama is three deep at the point guard position there, and they can kind of mix and match those guys as well. I've seen sometimes where they've had all three on the court at the same time. So I think this Alabama basketball team is really looking good. I think there's a lot of promise, but I'm going to put it to you like this. At this point, Alabama's ranked eighth in the country. At this point last season, they were ranked sixth in the country, and they played number one Gonzaga. They went up, I don't think they were number six when they played Gonzaga, but they went up and blew out, well, I might say they blew them out, but they beat Gonzaga pretty good up in Seattle. And by the way, Gonzaga returns that trip here next Saturday. Alabama's got Houston this Saturday. Then Gonzaga comes to Birmingham next Saturday to play Alabama to return that game from last season. So, but this was the point after that Gonzaga win where Alabama hit their wall. And they hit the wall and they kind of, you know, really never came out of that funk all season, to be honest with you. And the team that kind of started that was Memphis. And lo and behold, Memphis is the opponent next week after they play Gonzaga. Now, they get Memphis in Tuscaloosa this time. Last year, the game was in Memphis. So we'll see what happens, man. I think this team is on the right track. And it's going to be a really tough SEC race with Auburn, another team that's close to the top 10. Tennessee is number 7. They're in the top 10, obviously. Arkansas, you got three top 10 teams in the SEC. If you look, count Auburn, you got four top 12 teams in the Southeastern Conference. This football league that was supposed to be or whatever, the hoops are pretty good. And you notice I did not mention the Kentucky Wildcats. Wildcats are not off to a bad start, but they're only like in, I think, ranked 15th or whatever this week, 15, 16, somewhere in there. And, you know, things have not been the best, man. And the rhetoric out of Kentucky with the fans has not been good. It just has not. And a lot of people are coming down on John Calipari, so we'll see if they can get it together. But obviously, you see the SEC is 5, 6, 7 teams deep. Mississippi State is another team that is ranked also. So Alabama's got to make sure they get it together and don't go into tailspin like they did last season. I think this team should be a lot better off, but we shall find out here in the next month or so. Or really starting in these next couple of weeks with these three huge games that they have in a row coming up here in the next week and a half. Anyway, man, so we'll see. I will talk just a little bit NBA really quick. Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks are trying to do their thing in the South, but both of them are struggling, man. Miami has had their injuries. Jimmy Butler's been in and out of the lineup. Atlanta is a mystery right now, to be perfectly honest with you. It's just something off about this Hawks team, man. I watched them play the Rockets. The Rockets are my favorite team here just a week or so ago, and it's still seemingly the same type thing. And this is the team now. This is the team that went out and they were tired of their old coach that they got rid of before they got Nate McMillan. And Nate McMillan came in and he was, you know, everything just changed. I think that was not this past season, but the season before last. And you know, it seemed like there was just a great deal. It was a great move. The players were the ones that put the pressure on the ownership or whatever to make the move, and they made it, and then they took off, and they had that long playoff run to the Eastern Conference Finals. Last season, they kind of dropped off a little bit. And right now, man, I'm going to tell you, this team looks like they're going to drop off again a little bit. The defense is really non-existent at times. In that game against Houston, the Rockets murdered them on the boards. Now, I will say this is the Rockets up and down, obviously really young team. A lot going on with that basketball team as well. They beat Philadelphia the other night and then came back and lost last night to San Antonio, the worst team in the league. So I'm not sure what's up with that. But obviously, you know, maybe playing themselves into Victor Wembanyama. Try to say that twice, two or three times in a row. The Wembanyama sweepstakes or whatever. So, you know, but Houston is one of the best rebounding teams in the league. But, I mean, they murdered the Hawks on the glass that night. And that should not have been. You have guys like Clint Capella and you have John Collins. And you have a couple other bigs. The guy out of USC, I can't think of his right name right now off the top of my head. You know, I mean, look, man, this it's just something not right with this basketball team. It just really isn't. Trey Young is going to be Trey Young. Now, I'm not the biggest Trey Young fan because I don't like the reckless threes. That's kind of what I call them. I mean, he's just, you know, he'll throw them up from anywhere. And if he's hot or not, this dude's going to throw them up. He's maybe been a little bit better about that this season. The matchup with him and DeJounte Murray in the backcourt, it's been okay. But I don't know, man. This team is really, really starting to look a little suspect to me right now. Again, I'm not saying that I think they're a good team. Obviously, they're going to make the playoffs. But when you sit there and you make a move like that for DeJounte Murray and you make some of the other moves that they made, just making the playoffs is not enough. And you sit there and you think about the Heat, same thing. You know, they're a team that have not made enough moves. They need to make a couple of moves for them to have a chance to move up. So we'll see what goes on. You got teams out. Obviously, the Boston Celtics are running away with this thing in the East. They're by far and away the best team, right? Well, not by far and away because you got to consider Milwaukee. But until Middleton gets himself acclimated, Boston's still the better team of that group. Still, I think that's going to be the Eastern Conference final matchup. Then you go to the West, man. And, of course, before I talk about the West, you got the East. Brooklyn kind of starting to find its way with Kyrie and Durant and all that. We'll see how that goes. Philadelphia, you know, not really. You know, they've got to get Tyrese Maxey back. They just got Harden back the other night, so we'll see how they react to that. You look at the Lakers, they have come on big time out West. That is a big time thing going on with them, with Anthony Davis, and he dropped a double nickel the other night, 55 points, 17 rebounds. He has been putting up the big time numbers. Had an illness the last couple of games, so he's been out, but things starting to look up in LA again. My thought process has not changed much about them. I still think you're going to be talking about a team that maybe gets in the top six, maybe, but more than likely, I still think they could be a play-in team. We'll see how it goes. Golden State is having their struggles. The West is really I'm not really sure what to make out of the West because you have the Phoenix Suns leading the way out there, but they just got blown out the other night by Boston. So, a lot to be played, and we have not gotten to Christmas. So really, a lot of people's minds, the NBA season hasn't even started yet. So we'll see how that goes. Two surprise teams out of each conference, the Sacramento Kings, maybe not a huge surprise, but they have really been doing the job there. And the Indiana Pacers, keep a watch out for those Pacers with Tyrese Halliburton and Nembhard, the guy out of Gonzaga running the show there. And, of course, that dude, Benedict Mathurin. What a name that is. But that dude could be your Rookie of the Year coming up here in 2023 within the NBA. again, a lot of good stuff, man. We're going to get deeper into the NBA. We're going to get deeper into this college basketball as we go as well. So much to talk about here on Ball About the South. I'm just glad you saw fit to join me here. And I definitely hope that you will like, subscribe, and meet me here on a weekly basis in Ball About the South with Seawood. Anyway, man, like I said, I appreciate you coming by. Have a good weekend. Be safe. Peace.